Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
There's nothing like a candidate for mayor opening her arms and saying, "Thanks, Ed Burke, for making everything possible and for letting me have my wedding at your house. And I cried and I carried the flowers and Annie Burke, the judge, helped." Yeah, because that's where we're at. And you're going to hear all about it. You're going to hear about that. You're going to hear Lori Lightfoot, one of my favorite candidates for mayor, running for mayor, former prosecutor. Jeff Carlin is here from WGN AM, Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And in the studio now, we have Scott Stanis, the award-winning cartoonist of the Chicago Tribune, wearing a kind of a weird hat that we'll discuss in a few seconds. And I'm John Cass, husband, father, nationally syndicated columnist for the Chicago Tribune, member of the editorial board. Yeah, I'm the pink flamingo on the broad green lawn of the Chicago Tribune. And what about this Beto O'Rourke thing, okay? Can you jump the shark? Look, if he were conservative, I would be ashamed of him because he opens his mouth. You hear about this? He opens his mouth at his dental hygienist and puts it on Instagram. It becomes a big deal. Let's enter Beto's mouth, America.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Beto.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Happy New Year, Scott Stanis and Jeff Carlin.
Thank you, John. Same to you.
Jeff, Scott Stanis, what's up with you, man?
What do you mean, what's up with me? I walk in here and you're like, oh, I'm mad at you. I'm going, oh, boy.
I'm not mad at you, Scott.
Just
what
disappointed?
Are you talking about? What am I disappointed about? No, I'm not.
Okay, good.
Did I say something that's slightly like disapproving of Scott?
In your monologue there, though, we were questioning your hat. It does look like there's a polar bear about to poop on the brim of your hat.
Yeah, it's a polar bear. Right. I love minor league baseball. I love baseball.
Okay,
minor league baseball.
Okay.
And this is actually, believe it or not, it's a polar bear. And of course, it's a logo for a Cuban baseball team.
Because there's nothing like polar bears in Havana.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, back before global warming.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where they
had
right.
polar bears.
There you go.
People don't know this.
For those millennials out there.
Okay.
It was a beer company that sponsored this team, and it was Polar Beer. And this was their logo.
So beer. I just said, what is that? Is that carbohydrates?
Oh,
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Listen, I got to tell you, the response to your column and your health or your...
The one about...
Can we talk about this? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sure you can.
Because people...
You mean the one about parallel universes?
You're like me. You hear... I mean, you can get 10,000 compliments on something, but it's that one...
Oh, where the guy said, "I hope you die."
Yeah. That's the one you remember. So you are beloved out there, and people are very concerned. Okay.
They're not, but I love everybody. I'm Mr. Love.
Yeah? You are.
And you know what?
You're so sweet.
People are sending me these like these recipes every day, like I said on the last podcast, salmon cakes.
Oh, well, I didn't tell you this.
Had a good salmon cake? No.
I didn't tell you this. Janine decided that we were going to be pretty much vegan.
This is not new, though.
Well, I guess
right?
You're not coming to my house because I'm paleo baby. I'm just not pasta man.
She has great recipes. She wants to pass some your way. She actually is. She's Sicilian, so they're, you know, magnificent food.
Yeah, I'm sure. But why do you make it, you raising your hands and
it's
you're
really
opening
good.
Your fingers like you're doing the hand talk, like I'm talking like an Italian guy.
That's, yeah, I'm this right? is my English to Italian translator right
okay,
here.
Okay, look, I'm alive. You know, I'm eating less carbs. I can button my, check this out.
Look at this.
Buttoning my jacket. Well, I'm not. I can't button it because I have carpal tunnel and I can't feel my fingers. There you go.
Da, da, da,
how's
da,
that?
Da, da, da.
Anyway, it only took me 10 minutes. So what's going on, you guys? What we're talking mayoral politics in a few minutes with Lori Lightfoot, but I want to get
O'Rourke. That's
yeah. What is with that jumping the shark, I know, weasel?
You're right. That when I hadn't seen this, and then John comes in, he's like, "Oh my God, have you seen Beto's mouth?"
What?
And I like, "What? What are you talking about?"
Scott doesn't know. He's just looking.
I don't. And I'm
so Beto O'Rourke did a viral video of him getting his mouth cleaned.
Oh, it's a video.
Yeah. So he shot it, and so like. First of all,
he's got his mouth open. He's inviting America to enter his mouth.
Right, enter his mouth.
Way to go, Beto.
Yeah. That's what we all want to see. Everybody thinks, oh, man, I wish I had this on film. You know,
I can't wait
my mouth cleaning.
Like I said, proctologist next.
Right.
That's how it is with him.
Or the prostate exam.
Just the one finger, maybe? I mean, but still.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's what he's doing, right? He's like, these are private things. I don't want to get involved in your man, don't start with this stuff.
Right. I mean, I feel like he's, you're right, jumping the shark. That's exactly what it is. Before he's even got running here in for 2020.
Do you think Eisenhower, when he was having his teeth cleaned, went, well, I liberated Europe.
Yeah.
I've fought successfully the Cold War.
Right.
But you know what would really make my presidency awesome? Is film of me having my teeth cleaned.
Right.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force. You are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
So I'm here at the dentist, and we're going to continue our series on the people of the border. I'm here with Diana, my dental hygienist. Diana's going to tell us a little bit about growing up in El Paso.
What a shallow...
You know, Johnson would have done that, but it's a different breed.
He would have picked up his dogs by the ears and then talked to his aides while sitting on the can. But actually, he did that.
He did that. that was his thing.
Yeah, that was... It's odd. So the reason why the Beto O'Rourke thing came up with the opening your mouth and inviting us in is that Scott started with Rip kind of nervous about not liking how conservatives are dumping on... Ocasio-Cortez. And I trumped him by saying Beto is worse.
Okay. My point is that the conservative press, which I follow a lot, and Twitters and all this stuff, I mean, she does anything. She's a freshman congressman. She is one of 400 plus. It doesn't, I mean, she'll say, and she's also young. So
yeah.
No offense, Jeff, but the young people say stupid things.
Yes. That's our MO.
It's what I can tell you. I said a lot of stupid things when I was a kid. So it just seems to me like it's overkill now. Let's go. I mean, you have Nancy and Chuck. Isn't that enough? Did you see the response to the Trump? I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, that was scary.
Did you see the memes? Because they were hilarious. This is like
American
and it's
Gothic.
True. It's like this is the parents when you thought your parents were asleep and you're sneaking into the house and they weren't.
What's with her eyes, man? What's with her eyes? She's opening her eyes wide shut. What is that? Is it plastic surgery?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
What, she's doing a Malcolm McDowell thing with the toothpicks, like opening her eye.
Watch the film.
Now, the best of all that was the one that just broke on Friday, which was the moron from CNN. What's his name?
Oh, Jim Acosta at the wall, yeah.
Yeah, did you hear about
this?
Yes. Why are you struggling?
I'm saying yes because you and I are journalists. You and I have been in journalism for a lot of years.
Many years now.
Yes, I'm not going to say how I'm coming up on 40-year anniversary.
Yeah,
so
okay, you're still trimming.
Sure.
It.
That's because I'm vegan. I want meat so much.
What about Acosta? You see him on the wall?
He's embarrassing. It's that kind of thing is an embarrassment to journalism.
Which thing? Let's state the thing.
The showboating, the Sam Donaldson on steroids.
He shows up at the wall and videos himself walking on a border with a wall these are the steel structures, the steel barriers that Trump's talking about, but there's no people here.
And you can see the actual border crossing behind him, which is not far off. So he's clearly right at a border crossing. And he's like, oh, look, there's nothing going on here.
He's making the case for Trump to have the wall because nothing's going on because they can't get over. What is it? And why is it? Is he stupid? Stupid or what? That's the title of a new show.
Yeah, yeah.
Stupid or what?
Why would you make the case for Trump if you're Jim Acosta?
I don't think he thinks he's making it. I think he feels everything he does, he's smarter than everyone else in the room. And it's a conceit that a lot of journalists have now. And there's no one sadly, because of the erosion of journalism, there's no one there to say, dude, knock it off.
Right. Don't become the story.
Don't become the story.
Yeah, and then they're like, I am the story because I'm saying something.
There's no Lou Grant talking about I hate Perky. Whatever, right? Didn't he say that? I hate
Spunk.
Perky. Spunky.
You've got yeah, Spunk.
I hate Spunky. I hate it too. I don't want to see Spunky. I don't want to see Jim Acosta on the wall making the case for President Trump, although I tend to agree with it. I mean, just the whole thing is bizarre.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that the press, the mainstream, and I'm with you on this, John, it kills me. It does. It honestly does kill me because of my love and respect for this business. I mean, I'm going to be 60. I gave my whole life to this profession. And to see it diminished like this and
it's just TV, man.
Marginalized. No.
The difference, I got this weird thing for you to understand.
All right.
Okay, it's TV. Don't call it the press. Sorry, Jeff. Call it the TV. TV news.
I'm going
to broadcast news. No offense to Jeff. It's not the print. It's not print. And there's this weird thing with print. You pay with cash, so no one knows who you bought, and you buy a newspaper, and no one, and then you read stories, and no one knows what stories you read. Weird.
Like
it's called freedom.
I don't understand this.
Freedom?
Yeah. No. And well, but print journalism is going the same direction because they've gotten rid of so many of the layers of vetting that we had to go through when we were journalists.
Now it's all attitude. Now everyone's a columnist like me.
Yeah. And everyone, I mean, a place I used to work, the Birmingham News, it literally goes from phone to internet. There's no editor. There's no nothing. Jeez. And that's a
what
danger.
What do you mean? There are no editors at the Birmingham?
Very few. No copy editors. No, and no line editors. So,
yikes.
Yeah.
Now here's Jeff Carlin, as we know, executive producer WGN's Rokon Show with Anna DeVolantis, in the afternoons. You're not an editor per se, but you kind of edit.
The
program.
Yeah.
And you help, like, if the battleship, God forbid, but what if Ro wasn't there that day and Anna wasn't there and you had other people on and they were like say Scott and John Cass were on.
Right.
And we were like listing, you know, going all over the place. Would you get into our ear and say, hey, guys, stick to the program or stick to the format?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing is that you have with somebody who thinks they know what they're doing, and I'm not. There's nobody specific
just like
in this,
me.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. They come to you with, "Oh my God, did you see this thing? It's Beta O'Rourke. We got to talk about it. It's so cool." And you'd be like, "That's not important. Like for broadcasts. I mean, for that type of thing. No, there's way more important things out there." Or, "Hey, I saw this thing.
More important than Beto's mouth open?"
Yes.
No, I think that's the standard of the Democratic Party.
Well, but that's my point is that that stuff is the, "Hey, I'm the cool guy.
Oh, yeah,
come be my friend." Like that's nonsense. It doesn't there's no governance being altered there. Or there's no point in even giving that the time of day.
Stannis's comment about Dwight D. Eisenhower or say like Marshall.
Oh,
right,
yeah.
The Dean Acheson, Avril Harriman, all these people, would they stand and say, "I would like America to look into my mouth"?
I'm going to guess so. No, because they didn't. You know,
but I mean, they wouldn't even entertain. They would get up if we had this discussion in front of them. They would just get up and leave the room. They wouldn't even make a face. They would just. Gentlemen would just get up.
Yeah. No, we have. I mean, let me ask you this: who are the serious thinkers now? I mean, the Senate used to have the lions of the Senate. Remember, there was Moynihan. Yeah. I would count as one of them.
Sure.
Scoop Jackson.
I would
count as one.
I was a Scoop Jackson Democrat.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was against communism, and now the whole damn Democratic Party is like a commie party almost.
You know, John, socialism. I think communism. If you're from, yeah, you know what? It just was tried wrong, and it was a victim of bad press.
It couldn't work. They only murdered 90 million people, and you know what's amazing? Or 100 million. What's amazing is in Chicago, they will talk. People on the left will talk about corruption. As we'll hear from Lori Lightfoot in a few minutes, and people talk. The discussion will be about the wages of corruption, and then nationally they'll talk about how important it is to have government involved in every aspect of your life, especially if you're a socialist. And people don't seem to put it together that both Chicago and National is about breeding ground for the kind of corruption that controls your life and breaks your bones and those other things that start with a B, using government to do it. Why don't people, is there something wrong with me here? Is my blood sugar going crazy? I don't understand, that I can't explain it?
I've asked you this question a million times.
They can't handle the truth.
What? No, but you talk to a Chicagoan about corruption. You talk to an Illinoisan about corruption, and is this an issue for you? And their eyes glaze over.
I mean, they're all corrupt. Yeah, that's that.
Which is horse feathers. It's not true.
Because they are.
But even you walk down the street, you go to a bar, you bring this up, and they just go, they all are. This is how it works. And
I read newspapers, and I read some people that pretend to know what they're talking about, and they don't. Right? They just don't. And I read it, I'm like, oh, God, what a moron. And part of that is they don't understand what corruption is. They think it's about guys. They think it's about guys who talk like, you know, how you doing and all that. It's not. Corruption is when you have what's wrong about corruption in Chicago and in Illinois and the whole Chicago way and everything. It's that the people have been convinced that this is the way to be and this is the way to go, so that they corrupt themselves because they want that corrupt alderman to help them get their kids a job, or they want that corrupt alderman to help screw their neighbor in exchange for a benefit for themselves. And it's all about human nature. It's about understanding the human nature and what it is. And I'm sorry, but the cost of corruption isn't an alderman taking money. It's what has happened to us as a culture.
Well, yeah, you grow up inside a box, and you know, all you see is the box, these walls, and then
Plato's cave.
Right, and someone opens a lid, and you're like, holy crap, there's a whole other world? Right. This is not how it has to be? What? I mean, that's the insanity that we live in.
But where is it like that? Where is that ideal alternate universe where Bill Daly's every comment is not thought of as something, groundbreaking? Let's make a headline. Everything Bill Daly says is like, oh, let's reduce the size of the council. Oh, my God, that's wonderful.
Who could have thought of this?
Yeah,
well,
right.
Everybody.
No, I worked in, first of all, the world is populated by people, so we're imperfect.
As opposed to donkeys.
Or dinosaurs, right. Which would be awesome if we had smart dinosaurs.
Trolls.
But anyway, I worked in Grand Rapids, Michigan for a year. At the Grand Rapids Press, when there was a Grand Rapids Press. And that government was actually, I hated drawing there because the government was actually not corrupt. They felt like their duty was to the people. They took the fact that they were taking money from hardworking Grand Rapids residents, that they should spend it judiciously.
All those old Protestants.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're Calvinists. I guess they knew they were going to do this.
This is written. They understood the Muslims very well in that sense. Yeah, it's all written.
So I've worked in one place where you could say, you know, they were doing it as right as they could get it. You know, but, you know, I came here from Birmingham, Alabama. Alabama has had its governor resign in disgrace. It has its Speaker of the House go to jail and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And they all left because of ethics laws that they had in place. And, you know, that's the difference. They actually enforced them.
When does the left take responsibility for corruption, Jeff Carlin? Because the more government you have, the more you can use government to squeeze human beings. That's corruption. So when do they, since they support big government and all that, when do they take responsibility?
But I don't think they see it that way. I think they just see that that's just the way it is.
What do you mean, like that the Soviet model can work if only there was not a Stalin but a good person?
A good Stalin.
Good Stalin.
Well, no. Is there the good Stalin in the alternate universe?
Right.
They don't see that government interference in markets is an aggregate evil in and of itself. They absolutely don't see that, period. So when you don't see evil, then you know you're going to let evil things happen.
I'm so weirded out by all this. Chicago is at the edge of a cliff. Chicago's at the edge of the cliff, and I'm wondering, do people when they're, you know, the left always says history will judge you. What is that nonsense they always do? You will be on the wrong side of history, say these pundits, right, to scare the shit out of you. You know, they're like, oh, you want to be on that side? When is that going to be applied to this mayoral campaign? Because we have Lori Lightfoot coming in. We've had Paul Vallis. These two people are legitimate people. But these other people that are in this, I mean, are you joking? Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, what's in it for me? I mean, that's the idea that you have to ask about all these candidates. And what's in it for Paul Vallis? Getting his name dragged around, getting beat up by people. What's in it for Lori Lightfoot? I mean, they're not connected. They're not people who have a pocketbook to fill or have, you know, checks they have to cash because they've promised themselves.
Everything Lori Lightfoot says, and she'll say it in an interview in a few minutes, could make a headline. But Bill Daly says it, and it's a headline. In both papers, and on television, and in radio. Bill Daly says, blah, blah, blah. And I don't mind Bill Daly, but why is that the headline and not Scott Stennis and not what Lori says or what Paul says?
I think when I've got to the newsroom and I talked about, you know, forgive me for getting the name of the alderman who's always on the outs and always trying to have ethics and always trying to do the right thing.
Scott Wagsbeck.
Thank you. And he's
should be the finance chairman,
yeah,
and a friend of mine.
Oh, you seriously think?
I like him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But I mentioned the name in the newsroom, and oh, he's just a goo-goo.
Really? You know what? I'd like to have a like stick, that, like an axe handle, because I watched Shane the other day. Shane, you know where Van Heflin takes the axe handle and goes in the Grafton store to help Shane beat up the bad guys? And that would be, like, really? He's just a goo-goo? People say that?
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the attitude, and that's that permeates throughout journalism, right?
And that just corroborates what you said earlier about this is what people expect.
Stop it! You fooled your head enough of it. You'll all get killed. Start at you and Shane back on out of here.
If what?
Get out of here.
Riker ain't paying for this damage, not with a nickel he ain't. I'm paying for what's broke. No, by Godfrey, we're paying for what's broke. Me and Shane.
Can we talk about something nice, Jeff Carlin, please?
Okay.
Change the subject, please. Okay, here's one. I got it. I mentioned it to Jeff, and he didn't bring it up the other day.
Jeff.
Radio bursts from outer space. Anybody hear that story?
FRBs.
Radio bursts from outer space from another galaxy far away. They all of a sudden they shoot at us. Boop, 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 whatever they do with the radio bursts. These are aliens coming here. Sticking straw, they're giants, and they're sticking straws in our heads and suck our blood. Come on, what is that with the radio burst from outer space?
Yeah, frequent radio or fast radio bursts.
And so don't tell me it's just like
it's a star collapsing. That's what it is. I mean, that's
There's a lot of noise out there.
There's a lot of noise out there, and these things have been. And the reason this story became news is because this new telescope, Canadian telescope, and that's not a euphemism, came online. And it's capturing these things at a much more succinct process. They're able to target specific areas of the sky, and they're catching these. Now, these things have been known and have been tracked for decades, but the idea of being able to find them repeatedly is tough because the targeting technology and trying to find a little square of the sky where you swept past, you caught them, and you can't go back and find them. Now they're able to, they can target, they can find them, and they can lock onto them, and they can track them for a while.
So they can track them as their giant spaceships come towards us and turn us in, stick straws in our heads, and suck all our fluids out.
No.
Scott Stennis. The fact that you're looking at Jeff when he's describing this and nodding like you know what he's talking about freaks me out because both of you are like space nerds in this respect.
Well, I was actually at John Hopkins Applied Physics Labs for New Year's Eve because that's how I roll for the flyby of Ultima Thule. And got to see the Kuiper Belt object when they revealed the first images of it.
The snowman.
What are you talking about? You went to Johns Hopkins on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
I'm in the hospital dying. And you go to New Year's Eve to do what at Johns Hopkins?
The Applied Physics Lab. The New Horizons mission, which was the flyby of
Pluto. So you weren't eating green apples and crappy peanut butter. You were actually at Johns Hopkins learning science.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm actually a friend of Alan Stern, who's the principal investigator for the New Horizons mission. And he invited me out. And so I went out there and got to hang out with other dorks, and it was great.
What was it? What did you learn?
Well, the science hasn't all come back all the way. It looks like a snowman, as Jeff said. The Ultima Thule, it looks like it's two spheres that are connected. And what's fascinating is the speed to which they connected was probably like when you're back trying to get into a parking space, you kind of tap the bumper behind you, like 2 or 3 miles an hour, which is amazing. So they're conjoined. It's red, which they think is irradiated ices on the surface of this thing. It's and because now we got behind the sun, stupid sun.
Yeah, we won't hear from it for quite a while.
Yeah, until February, we're going to get the science will begin to download some more. We'll get the high definition images of it and the close ups of it.
And to back up to New Horizons, it's the fastest man made object ever by tenfold.
Yes, I mean, yeah, 33,000 miles an hour is how fast it's going.
Right, and this is an object that was sent up to get outside our solar system and look beyond and see
what once it finds these things. Here's the question.
It made a bunch of stops, but those stops were just happening.
No, it's only made one at Pluto, and we didn't even know Ultima Thule existed halfway through the mission.
My point is that...
I'm stuck in science world.
The idea that... I know you are. But my point is that it did a flyby of multiple planets in our solar system.
Just one, Jupiter, to get the gravity assist, and it took some great pictures of...
Right, but it took a...
Io.
Yeah, Io, but it took a slingshot off of Jupiter. I mean, it swung around to get its trajectory. So to get itself up to speed, this is how the aliens are going to come to us to bring it back to us.
Yeah, please.
The idea that you can use gravity of these massive bodies in space.
I watch Star Trek. I know that they go around the big body and they slingshot. But here's the problem. Theory. You go out there and you find these things. Guess what? You start looking for them. They will find you.
Yeah, no.
You know? They'll find us.
No.
And then when they notice us, they come here, they kill us. There's no other way around it.
Sentient being out there that has the ability to find us or to see this, and they already are tracking us, we're already done. Because their technology is going to be so advanced and so
beyond.
It doesn't matter. We're not giving them any extra help. They've already got everything they need.
So either they come here, stick straws in our heads, suck our bodily fluids out, or they're benign... They care about us like benign, like politicians, like the big state, like the deep state, like liberal Democrats everywhere. And they tell us, oh, you know what? No pasta for you, John Cass, because your blood sugar. Stuff like that.
Right.
I don't want to live like that.
But there's a
bastards, get out of
Scott,
my country.
You might remember the theory, but there's a theory out there it's a pretty good theory, that any society, anything, any whatever, by the time you would develop technology that was advanced enough to be able to go into deep space, that technology will have built up on your own planet, your existence, so vast, and people would have taken advantage of it that you would have wiped yourself out because it would be able to be used for evil.
I'm not Isaac Asimov.
But what I'm saying is that there's no way. Like
foundation.
The threshold is so thin that if for some society to be able to come to our galaxy and to find us and all of a sudden screw with us, their society would have collapsed eons ago.
Well, look at what human reactions to anything.
Yeah.
I taught our base instincts. We find something new. Our first three instincts are, can I eat it? Can I have sex with it? Can I kill someone with it?
Right.
Because
those are the three things you would ask.
Yes.
Yes.
can't we just
leave it? I found
the
salami. What do I do with it? Right. Right, isn't that it? No. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's it, but we're...
That's how they will look at us. They will look at us this way, which is why I bring up this one thing before we go. Parallel worlds, okay? Anybody know about Hugh Everett III? Princeton scientist?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Oh, you don't? Well, I guess he's the author of, you know, he studied quantum physics. And he came up with this idea of multiverse. Hello, Jeff Carlin.
Yeah,
multiverse. I know. Hugh Everett III. And in the multiverse, there are different Scotts. It's like a universe, right? There's a universe with Scott Stannis wearing the polar bear hat. And then
there's a universe where there's a polar bear wearing a Scott Stannis hat. That's the idea.
Yeah, and also like an evil Scott Stannis and a good Scott Stannis. Different, like Scott Stannis's, and they fan out. Infinity, man.
Okay.
This is blowing my mind, okay? Which brings me to Counterpart. Have you ever watched this show?
And this is where it all comes down to.
You ever watch this show, Counterpart?
Not.
Do you have cable?
Very basic.
You don't have Stars?
No.
Do you know who J.K. Simmons is?
No.
You know,
yeah, you do.
Farmers.
Yeah. Farmers.
Yes. Oh, yes. Right.
It's the smartest show on TV.
Oz.
Do you have it? Do you have Stars?
I don't.
Okay. I'm really going to bleep and get upset now because nobody, I can't talk about Counterpart with you guys.
No. I mean, but I know the concept. But
we're going to have the guy on soon, the Counterpart guy.
I'm going to catch up on it.
Yeah.
What's the concept?
The concept is that in Berlin, East Germany, years ago, 30 years ago, there were scientists, and they created experiments, and the experiment ripped, basically, reality in two. And there were two universes created with, like, a good Scott Stannis and then another Scott Stannis. They split, okay? So, and they, but they meet at one spot under Berlin, under these broken stairs. And you can go from one universe to the other. One universe releases a virus that kills many in the other world. Their spies start fighting each other. They release spies, and it's espionage. It's spy-fi with brains. It takes a brain to watch this show. J.K. Simmons is absolutely fantastic, playing Howard Silk and Howard Prime. It is unbelievably good, and it probably won't last because it's too smart. You have to be smart to watch this show.
Yeah. Jeff and I are.
Yeah, dang.
You guys are so smart because you were talking about that whole alien thing, and I'm just sitting there looking at them like, I'm really just a child among giants, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
Here's the last point to calm you, John, that there's no way that this is what you think it is.
You know it is.
No, it's not, because...
What, the aliens with the straw, like War of the Worlds? That's it.
The probability that two civilizations, that one and ours, would have technology that would cross, there would be a Venn diagram where the technology would be link up, where we could track them and they could track us, in the like you said, the never-ending possibilities of...
Yeah.
of existence.
Infinity, man.
It's such a small sliver of possibility that it's impossible.
What are you, wait, infinitely possible, impossible.
Right.
Excuse me?
For them to cross over, that's the point, is that it's such a vast expanse of an infinite existence. And
are you talking about alternate universes? Or are you talking about the one universe where these creatures that just shot the radio bursts will come and kill
I'm talking
us?
I'm talking about technically both.
You think that's impossible, that we're alone in the universe?
No. There's no way we're alone.
That they won't find us?
Exactly. There's no way that there's two civilizations are advanced enough to be able to communicate to each other and have an overlap.
They don't communicate. They just show up.
Right. Yeah,
and like it's the Scott, Stannis
giant space straws. I get it.
Either they want to have sex with us, or eat us, or use us to kill each other.
Right.
Okay. And you know what? That was accomplished without any pot, and pot's not legal yet, right? And I'm not going to smoke it anyway.
By the way, did you see the numbers from Washington State? The tax dollars they're getting from this are not what they expected.
There's a fellow who just wrote a book from the New York Times about warning people that maybe it's not really a good idea for kids to smoke pot. I'm just going to say, it's called psychosis and other issues. Yeah. But, you know, what do I know? I'm just a dad.
No.
Yeah, okay, well, we dealt with space, pot, Beto's mouth, that mouth opening wide. It's like, you know, too trippy. But I'd rather talk about something real, which is Lori Lightfoot, one of the first to challenge Rahm Emanuel, former prosecutor, and she's here with us right now.
It's my pleasure.
Thanks for being here. If Chicago really wanted a way out of its mess, we would have a campaign between two people. Lori Lightfoot and Paul Vallis. And that would be a campaign of ideas, of people with integrity, people who actually care.
And I have a lot of admiration for Paul. He's a guy that obviously has a lot of really good and thoughtful ideas.
But both of you, and even if you disagree, it would be legitimate disagreements over ideas rather than this nonsense we're seeing now where, I mean, like Bill Daley throws out some crap and it becomes a headline. Everything Bill Daley says now is a headline?
Apparently so.
What is that about?
Well, look, I mean, the fact is that after Bill left the Obama White House, where was he? He's the silent Bob. And we haven't heard anything from that guy. Yeah. And then what he's doing now is just throwing out a little chum to reporters, these half-baked ideas that aren't coherent, that don't really are not really going to have impact, but it's all about getting the press. And he showed up at a forum last night, but he typically doesn't. And he's hoarding all of his raw money to go on TV, but he's not really presenting himself to people in a public way to test his ideas, and but more importantly, to actually listen to people.
I was at City Hall, covering City Hall for years, when the last time I think the Chicago Tribune came out with this idea, 20 aldermen would be a, you know, let's reduce the number of representatives for the people. And I stopped at Rich Daley's office and Pat Huell's and his political brain, Tim Degnan. Okay, they're all there. And I said, what do you guys think? I mean, we're off the record, but geez, yeah. It's 20 years ago, right? What do you think of this? And they said, oh, it's good because we can control the city. Because if you have fewer representatives, you can control the city. And isn't that what, I'm surprised that journalists don't understand this and parrot his nonsense, Bill's nonsense, but also that politicians haven't gotten it. Bill Daley, to me, is the old way. I'm not against the man. Personally, I happen to like him, but it's just the old way.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're the new way.
Yeah, I think, you know, and I said this last night, and I'm sure I made some people upset. Anybody who got into the race after Rahm Emanuel bowed out, in my view, is automatically disqualified. And it's not that some of the people who jumped in aren't good people. Some are. Not all of them, but some are. But our city was going in the wrong direction. The needs of people all over the city in neighborhoods that are resource-starved were no different the day before Rahm announced than a day after. And these people who only got in after Goliath was slayed and suddenly found political courage just aren't credible to me.
Let's tick them off. First of all, Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. She's Mrs. Ethics or Ms. Ethics, but she gave Burke's kid a $100,000 job,
right.
And then she runs away. She doesn't answer the question.
Yeah.
You tell me. What about Tony?
So, look, I think one of the storylines about Tony Preckwinkle that no one, I don't think, has really focused on, because she's had a series of self-inflicted wounds. I mean, big ones.
You know, like lying?
The recent one about the trying to take credit for being the person who was a catalyst for getting justice for Laquan McDonald. I mean, how tone deaf do you have to be to realize that that's a, first of all, it's false. Secondly, it's unbelievably tone deaf. You're absolutely going to incite a violent reaction from the activists around the city, which is precisely what's happened.
Will Calloway. Last time I checked, Will Calloway, I know him well, and he's a friend of this program, was on talking about pushing for the release of the Laquan video. Wasn't there.
No, Tony was absolutely, utterly silent. And frankly, I've talked to Will, and I think he feels wounded personally because he's a very great spiritual guy.
Yeah.
But the notion that she was going to take credit for that and think that was like this her moment of glory was just absurd. But the larger concerning narrative about Tony Preckwinkle to me is this. She makes really bad decisions. I don't know who is in her team and who's given her advice, but imagine her being the mayor of the city, and we have some major crisis. We have a homeland security crisis. We have a weather-related crisis. Do you trust her and her people who have been absolutely incompetent in running her campaign?
You
trust them to lead?
Let's be honest who her people are. And I can't – I'm sorry, Jeff Carlin. I'm sorry that the my colleagues in journalism don't mention it. So either they're losers in this respect or they're lazy, and I don't think they're lazy. But Tony Preckwinkle is a creature of SEIU,
yeah,
and that means Balanoff, the other Balanoff, and Morrison.
Jerry Morrison.
So yeah. We're going to kiss their, and nothing against those boys. Okay, they're politicals, but we're going to have to kneel and kiss their hands if Tony's mayor. That's the people you're talking about.
That's right.
Why don't we want to mention it?
No, I mean, look, I
know you do, but why?
No, and but there are other people that are around her who are, frankly, I think, doing her a terrible disservice. But at the end of the day, you're the boss, yeah, and she is the boss, right? She's responsible. She's making the decisions. But it doesn't give me confidence that the people that she is seeking advice from are actually going to run the city in a way that we all are going to feel safe and that we've got a plan and a vision for the future. It's just not there.
As a prosecutor, you see her take the money from Burke, right? Burke and Chico raise the money.
Well, what you see her do, right, is lie about the circumstances in which she took the money. Oh, this is really Ann Burke and not the chairman, even though the invitation clearly only says the chairman invites you. And if you're really friends with Ann Burke, why are you putting her in a jam and saying that when she was actively running for re-election, she's soliciting campaign donations for a candidate, which is strictly forbidden? She can't even solicit a campaign donation for herself. Why would you do that to her? Right. That doesn't make any sense. So then it's the lie keeps taking different forms over and over again. But again, if you're a leader, as my old boss Terry Hillard used to say, when you mess up, you fess up and then you clean up, right? Fess up. Tell us about what the real relationship is. What was the quid pro quo that Ed Burke got and solicited from you in return for, now what we know is
$116,000. 116?
Yeah.
That's what she raised at that fundraiser?
That's what she's now saying that she raised at the fundraiser. But, of course, first she said, oh, we can't figure that out.
Yeah, she didn't know. Yeah, she didn't know. And then she gives then it comes out she's given Ed Burke's kid a job.
Right.
No, we all love our children. I don't go around telling candidates. Did I come to you, Lori, and say I have two college sons who should be working in the mayor's office or in your campaign? Did I do that?
No,
I didn't.
Missed that one.
But she gives him a job with our money. How does that work?
$100,000 a year job, right? The average citizens here make like half that, right? So he gets this very nice job with benefits, ostensibly something that's important, which is Homeland Security. Right? An important job for which he's not qualified. And then apparently can't be bothered to actually show up and do the work and then quits when he gets questioned. I mean, come on now. Yeah.
So, okay, what about Susana Mendoza? Mendoza, another one of these post-Romulan people, comes in. She has, look, I'm not against her personally. Again, I have to say this because I know everybody. I know them all, you know? But she's Burke's kid in a way. She's the Burke child.
Well,
he had her at the wedding at his house.
She says that Burke is her political mentor, and there's a video that's circulating of her from when she announced her run for city clerk, where he introduces her, and she says, "I would not be standing here today without Matt Burke." And then suddenly she, I don't really know him, and he should. I mean, again, if you're friends. Your friends.
Right.
And our friends make mistakes. We make mistakes. But be honest about it. And frankly, another thing I have concerns about with Susana is she's got so many Rahm people around her. She's got Rahm's media advisor. She's got some of his political strategists. So is she like the Trojan horse?
Where's the money guy?
And I think he's weighing in. We'll find out where Michael Sachs ends up landing.
And he's also friends with Mike Madigan now. He hasn't bought the Tribune yet. Maybe he's going to be my boss. We'll see. Like Billy Daly once almost bought the Tribune. Or, let's see, Jamie Dimon was going to buy it or something. And Bill said, I'll send you to Greenland to cover the city council. I wonder where Michael Sachs will send me. But either way, these oligarchs are deciding things for the people of Chicago.
Right.
Is that the right way to go?
No, of course it's not. I mean, we're at this important inflection moment. Where we really actually have the opportunity to change course from where we were in the past. I'm just hoping people wake up, recognize their power, and recognize that they actually have an ability to vote for somebody who is different. Of course, I hope that's me, but there's other candidates that I think, again, were in the race for the right reasons before Rahm got out, who offer a very different vision of the city than, the different broken factions of the machine represented by Preckwinkle, Daley, Mendoza, and Gary Chico.
I remember once in the summer, before all this happened, it seemed like it was warm out. And I'm on my deck at home, and I'm talking to you. And it's before Rahm drops out. And we're talking about he's got to drop out because the Laquan thing is getting too hot. You know what I mean? And you said, those who come in afterward, if he drops out, are like pirates coming in for booty. And I kind of like snickered, you know, on the phone, like a Beavis and Butthead moment that I had. But still, you were right.
Yeah,
it really is like that.
Yeah, it's a sense of entitlement that some of them have, and that they don't think about actual public service. They think about the potential for doling out the spoils of government, our hard-earned tax dollars, to friends and family.
You see,
and it's offensive.
You know about corruption, and before we came on this program, we talked a little bit just off mic. What is the nature of the Burke corruption? And granted, he's not convicted, but I'm not just talking about the criminal act or alleged criminal act. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the nature of corruption in using government to leverage your cash and using our government and then convincing us it's legal. How does that work, and what are the costs of that?
Well, you know, Dick Simpson, who's a supporter of mine, estimates that the corruption tax from the dirty money and other sources in the city is about $500 million a year. I mean, it has a real cost. I mean, if you think about the narrative that played out in the criminal complaint, here's guys that are trying to run a business. They just want to get a remodel so they can make more money, pay more taxes. And yet the kleptocracy that Burke has created is if you want to get, you got to give. But worse, and the insidious part of it, I think, which is where your question's going, is you look at this guy from CDOT, right, who's some mope.
Chicago Department of Transportation.
Yeah, so who gleefully goes to the alderman's ward, gets his marching orders and instructions, goes to the site, gives the business owners a bunch of grief, makes up some permitting that they have to have, and then goes back and reports his good deeds to the aldermanic office. The fact that that person believed that it was a good thing for him to do the bidding, where he's making things up and abusing the authority that he's given as a city worker. That is in some ways the worst part of the story, because it wasn't just Burke and the ward worker one, who I think we know as Peter Andrews, and the person in the finance committee hatching this scheme to shake down these people. Right. It's somebody who isn't necessarily in on the criminal enterprise itself.
Just a tool.
But right. Is a tool, and willfully so. That is the problem that we have to confront in city government and change the culture. I frankly hope that Rebecca Sheinfeld, the CDOT commissioner, finds out who that person is and fires them immediately.
I bet you he's driving a. I just got a feeling that he's driving an SUV and it's got a leopard skin interior. Okay, how you doing? Because that whole crew that ran CDOT for Rich Daley, by the way.
Yeah.
Tony Pacillo, that all that stuff hasn't changed.
Yeah.
It's still the how you doing boys on Grand Avenue and.
Yeah, I mean, when I worked in the procurement department towards the end of my city career, dealing with some of those folks in the infrastructure departments, man, oh man, was that eye opening? But right. Yeah, I mean, it's an insidious culture that has to change, but it's never going to change unless we have a leader who's willing to confront it head on.
Let's talk about the race for mayor now. With the we see Dorothy Brown, Jeff Carlin, has problems besides the fact that she benefited from a non-existent goat meat company. What are the problems there, Jeff? I think she might, and Lori, is she going to drop out of the race?
I think she's got a tough climb. Like Tony Preckwinkle challenged every woman of color, except she clearly cut a side deal to leave Amara Enya alone. Because her campaign chairman is Ken Bennett, who's the father of Chancellor Bennett, better known as Chance the Rapper.
Right.
So they clearly did a little wink and nod deal to let Amara alone. But look, Dorothy's at a process where no candidate wants to get to, which is you got to go. They've got over 1,100 invalid signatures that puts her under the 12,500 threshold. She's got to go and rehabilitate those by getting affidavits from people saying that they actually signed. That is a place where no candidate ever wants to be. It takes a huge amount of time, huge amount of resources.
How does it affect you, your campaign?
You know, look, I think less women and women of color has the potential to benefit me,
less
to be
women.
Sure.
Right.
Less.
There's some way to, I mean, you can almost make the argument that Enya helps Preckwinkle by taking that progressive vote from you.
No, there's no question about that. And, you know.
Am I wrong?
I think that's right. And and more to come on her, I think.
Yeah, there's that whole issue about her spokesman disappearing and there's other stuff in there.
There's a lot there. She's so far been given a pass by the media, but I can't imagine that's going to last forever. She has got to have the same kind of aggressive vetting that everybody else has.
And Preckwinkle gets rid of Dorothy Brown. That, you know, it's all about math, really, at the end. It's horrible that it's about math. Same thing with all these white guys in the race. I mean, I hate to think of it, but it's true. These white guys in the race, Billy Daly sopping up money, should be going to Vallis and Gary Chico and Gary McCarthy. Come on, ridiculous. Okay, Gary, I like you, man, but you can't run the city. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So I just wish we could get to it for the people's sake. You and Vallis fight each other out.
Well,
two people enter, one man leaves. Sorry, Jeff, I just hit the, you know.
Yeah, look, I think that we have more forums than I can count. And they're in different parts of the city, different sub-constituencies and issue groups. I really think that's going to give us a great opportunity to make our case to the voters. And, you know, Paul and I have been in this for a long time, he longer than I even. And, you know, I like to think that the cream rises to the top, that people are going to, they're sick and tired of the way that this government's been run. They want a government that actually reflects them and is not a form of a kleptocracy where you got to give to get. So I think that people are now waking up to the reality of a mayoral campaign. They see that there's a lot of people in the ring. I mean, I think the thing we got to convince people, like, yeah, there's so many people, but there are not a lot of real choices. It's a finite number of choices.
Where are the choices? Let's see. There's Lori Lightfoot, Paul Vallis. I'm really, Jeff, help me out. Where are the other choice? I mean, really, I'm trying to. They differ in terms of their economic platforms, their general politics. Paul's more of a centrist. Lori, in some respects, at least economically, is a little bit on the more left side. Not that much, but I don't. Responsibly, I can't think of what to have another 50 years of Daly, 20 years of Daly.
It seems like this machine wherever you turn, and that's the tough part. I mean, that's what people don't realize. I think they just see the name and they think, it's the same as the old as the new. I mean, they know what they think they know what's going on, but it's a shame because it's going to come to this. It's going to come down to what do people think? What's the reality? And the reality we're learning is everybody knows somebody.
Not everybody.
No, everybody. Everybody aside from Paul, really, and aside from Lori, is that everybody knows somebody and they're sent by somebody.
They all know too.
Well,
Lori
know,
worked
but,
for Rich. Paul worked for Rich. That doesn't mean they're like politicos, right?
You know,
I don't see you guys
we were frankly both, you know, policy wonks and administrators trying to get something done. Look, I think this Burke moment, to go back to where we started.
Yeah.
Really has been a wake-up call for people. There are people I know who literally are strangers stopping me on the street saying, hey, keep doing what you're doing. Keep speaking out. Keep making the case. I think people, this meteor that hit is really waking people up. So we're going to keep riding in that lane for sure.
I hope so. But before we go, I have to ask you, you can formulate the issue, I mean frame the issue and articulate it well, and so can others. But if it's not heard, and I'm, you know, earlier I was critical of my colleagues, and I don't mean to be, and I really don't, because everyone tries to make a living, and we're trying to do the right thing. But I'm wondering if the press corps, the media corps, is doing the city justice. And I don't mean social warrior justice, because I can't stand social warrior justice both, because it's all about virtue signaling. But I'm talking about covering the given context. Do you see it? Do you think? I don't want to criticize
the
media.
I think it's a. I mean, look, you know what's happened in media coverage better than I do. I think the depth isn't there where it used to be. I also know that, you know, the reporters that we talk to on a regular basis are under tremendous pressure to produce content and rapidly. Right. And that means you're not going to get the depth. There are some
media really good ones.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
Bill Ruthart, Dan Michalopoulos. Yep. I'll just name two off to Gregory Pratt.
Yep.
From the Tribune, I'll just name.
But I think that's frankly why it's really important as a candidate to try to control as much of the narrative as you can, and frankly use other avenues. I mean, social media, I'm the first to say that it's a blessing and a curse. The good part of it, though, is it gives you an opportunity to reach people without waiting and hoping that you get your message out through traditional print and TV media. Digital ads, I think, are an important way, and obviously, ultimately, television. But I think reaching people through a network of conversations, of ambassadors, peer-to-peer advocacy, that's worth its weight in gold, and that's where we've really focused a lot of attention, and we'll continue to.
As a prosecutor, last question. You read the complaint on Burke. We've talked about its political impact. How it's focused the debate on corruption in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But as a prosecutor, I mean, I'm not one, but I see Burke going down. I mean, if that's on tape, and then where does he trade?
Well,
he's got 2 years a tape. Who does he give up?
I'm told that there are 10,000-plus recorded phone calls. If you read the complaint, you saw that the wire was up on the basis of something else, and this Burger King caper kind of fell into the Fed's lap. So there's a lot more that's out there that we don't know about. We'll find out more. I think this coming week he's scheduled to have what's called a preliminary hearing. I would be surprised if the U.S. Attorney's Office doesn't indict him before that happens, so they don't have to subject any witnesses to cross-examination and give Chuck Sklarsky, who's a very able lawyer, the ability to cross-examine a government's witnesses. I don't think that's happening, but you never know. But clearly, there's more. And I think one of the more remarkable points in the complaint is after they tried the nice way, by their words, and they were ignored by the Burger King executives, and then they shut the project down, they had a meeting in December of 17. And leading up to that meeting, the Ward employee won, writes a memo to Ed Burke to kind of refresh his recollection, right, of what they've done leading up to that moment, so he's prepared. And stunningly, he memorializes the extortion, including the last line item in the memo. And by the way, you asked them for their tax business, and yet they haven't given it to you. I've never seen anything like that before. That in and of itself is the smoking gun, coupled with the telephone conversation.
Okay.
He's done.
We'll play hardball. Okay.
You see that and it thinks, okay, business as usual has become so business as usual that now it's becoming, like you said, memorialized. As a taxpayer and a citizen, how the hell do we fix this? How do we help? Because you know it's not just Burke. You know it's happening up and down the roster.
Yeah.
How do you come in and change that mentality or make it so it doesn't happen?
Well, you don't be complicit through your actions or your silence. And again, I mean, it really does start at the top. I mean, Rahm came in and he made these noises that he was going to do something to Burke, but at the end of the day, he capitulated. How do you let a guy have $100 million a year piggy bank over which you have no control, you have no insights? You call BS on that, and you don't let it happen. And frankly, you know, back in the day, you know, I worked for in City Hall in the summer of over the course of 2005, in the summer of 2005, when the FBI came and raided City Hall, right? So as this gathering storm was happening, and right. You know, I was still, you know, fairly close to the U.S. Attorney's Office at that time, I said to Rich Daley, when Pat Fitzgerald holds a press conference and announces yet another indictment of a city employee, you need to be standing there with him and tell him and send the message, not on my watch. They looked at me, and Rich Daley did, and his people who were looking, diving for cover, right, like I was insane.
Right, right.
Right? But you, if you really want to start down a different path, you got to stand tall, and you say in every form that you can, not on my watch.
Well, that means that you've got to, that presupposes that if you ask one of the Daleys, why was Hanhart the chief of detectives, they might have a comment, which they won't, because it's the Chicago way, Lori. There's one way to fix it, at least short term. Mm-hmm. I need your advice on this. Besides having everyone read the Constitution and realize that limited government is the best way, and become conservatives like me, which is why I'm a mm-hmm. conservative, because I covered City Hall and saw these excesses. It might be that the Supreme Court, Illinois Supreme Court, which sets the rules for lawyers, can say administratively, you want to be a lawyer? Be a lawyer. You want to be a businessman, a politician? Be a politician. You can't be an elected official and run a private law business at the expense of the constituents.
Yeah, I mean,
is
look,
it possible that
well, the look, look, under the under the existing rules right now, it's right. possible, right? The conflicts are rife. Burke, Madigan, on and on and on, right? Right. And if we had a fully functioning, it's called the Attorney Registration and Disciplinary Committee.
Correct.
These kinds of conflicts would be clear, and they would not be allowed. And now, a lot of conflicts are waivable, but the city is being taken advantage of by people who put their private pecuniary interest first. And this shouldn't be allowed. Of course, there should be an open investigation of Ed Burke years ago by the ARDC and by the Supreme Court. But then there's this little thing of who sits on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and the when the first ward and the wise guys lost control of picking judges, guess who moved in that vacuum? The 14th ward and the 13th ward, and they aced out the 36th ward, Sam Banks and those guys, and that's how it works.
Well, and thank God it's a federal case and not a state court case.
I can't tell you how much of a pleasure it is to actually talk to someone who knows how the Chicago way works, Jeff Carlin. Lori Lightfoot, good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
I could talk to you for hours. And in my perfect alternate reality, either you or Paul Vallis are mayor and the other one is his chief of staff or corporate or something.
Well, we're both working really hard to make sure that we keep raising the issues that need to be raised. And we've had a lot of time together over the course of the campaign. I have enormous respect for Paul, and we're going to keep fighting hard to the finish line.
And I know you're not a tag team or anything. I know that. Just I appreciate you being here, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thanks. You know, although I'm not living in Chicago now, on behalf of everyone in Chicago, thanks to you for running.
It's my great pleasure. It's been an amazing ride.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, the lady of the hour, the next city clerk of Chicago, Susanna Mendoza.
Thank you all so very, very much, Alderman Burke. You are a true champion of mine. He is really primarily the reason why I even stand before you today as a state representative.
Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by.
For Scott Stanis, the award-winning cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, author also of his own strip, Prickly City, and a podcast man himself, although he hasn't yet invited Jeff Carlin and I on his podcast. I wonder why. For Jeff Carlin, WGN producer of The Rokan Show with Anna DeVolantis, my friend, and a man who kept promising to bake pies for me until now I can't have any. For Lori Lightfoot, candidate for mayor of Chicago, thanks for being here. And for all of you out there, everything you do is appreciated. So find us on iTunes, write us a kick-ass review, and come back soon for another edition of The Chicago Way.